Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Balance Point, by Kathy Tyers.
Lieutenant Janus Solo rolled her X-Wing fighter up on its port S-foil and shoved her throttle forward. A Yuuzhan Vong Karl skipper had been harrying her wingmate. As it went evasive, a minuscule black hole appeared just off its tail and gulped down every splinter of laser energy Jaina poured into it. She matched her X-Wing speed to the skips and pursued. There'd been dozens of battles since Colonel Gavin Darklighter invited her to join Rogue Squadron. Her pride hadn't faded, but the thrill sure had. Too many midnight scrambles, too much death, too little sleep. But I'm in Rogue Squadron, she reflected, feathering her throttle, not because of who my parents are and not because the Force is strong in my family, but based on my own piloting skills. Besides, she thought, Rogue Squadron ought to include at least one Jedi Knight. The skip she was chasing swooped toward the Bothan assault cruiser Champion, which was flying cover for another refugee convoy. Kalarba's industrialized moon, Hosk, already wobbled in its orbit. The situation was hauntingly similar to Cernpadel's last hours, almost 10 months ago. There would be even greater losses here, to the Kalarbans. But to Jaina, like her dad, Cernpadel had been a tragedy that might never be matched. Vaping these skips wouldn't bring back Chewbacca, but it helped deaden Jaina's bitter memories. Keeping one finger on her stutter trigger, she showered the Karl skipper with crimson laser splinters. Her sensor showed the vortex draw back slightly, a little closer to the enemy ship that projected it. On her primary screen, a Chiss clawcraft swooped in from behind.
Covering you, Rogue 11.
Now, Jaina thought as she tightened her index finger on the main firing control, loosing a solid burst from all four of her lasers. Crystal shards and hot gravel blasted off the Karl skipper, propelling it into a slow spiral out of the fire zone. The Yuuzhan Vong pilot didn't eject. They all died with their ships, by choice, it seemed. Another skip vectored her way.
11,
a voice cried in her ear.
Break starboard.
Hot slime. Jaina goosed her throttle and broke, pitching her against her harness. The X-Wing shuddered. I'm hit, she cried. Adrenaline made her clench the controls. She eyed her primary board. Still got shields, though. She feathered stick and rudder, bringing the X-Wing about and maneuvering. Now she saw the big enemy ship astern of Champion. Just smaller than a Star Destroyer, the enemy ship's configuration reminded her of some weird marine creature. Blinding plasma was already pouring out at Champion.
Rogues!
Colonel Darklighter's cry caught her off guard.
Somebody just sucked Champ's shields. Get clear!
Jaina wrenched her stick and punched for full speed. She was passing Champion's port nacelle when light broke through from deep inside. Slowly, with an eerie, fatal beauty, a seam opened on Champ's glossy side. A voice shouted in her ear.
11, get clear!
The blast flung her against her instrument panel. Rudder pedals seemed to crush up through her legs. Her cockpit sides buckled, then vanished. A siren shrieked in her ears. She flailed down into the Force, grasping desperately. Then a white explosion of pain washed awareness away. Jason Solo stood with his father outside the mud block refugee hut they were sharing on Duro. Under the translucent gray dome that protected Settlement 32 from the planet's ruined atmosphere, T tension wrapped around him like a Jaren glass snake, invisible but so palpable through the Force that he could almost feel its coils constrict. Something was about to happen. He could feel it coming when he listened through the Force. Something vital, but what? A Rin female, velvet-furred with a spiked mane, her tail and forearm bristles graying with age, stood talking to Jason's dad, Han Solo.
"Those are our caravan ships," she bellowed, waving her hands. "Ours!"
She snorted, and the breath wonked through four holes in her chitinous beak. Han swung around, narrowly missing Jason with his left arm. "And right at this moment, we can't afford to take them off-world to run systems checks. You've been in a restricted area, Metsa." Splashes of red-orange fur highlighted Metsa's soft taupe coat. Her blue tail tip trembled, a gesture Jason had learned to interpret as impatience.
"Of course we've been in the ship lot," she snapped. "There's never been a security fence Rin couldn't get inside, and those are our caravan ships, ours."
She tapped her chest.
"And don't tell me to trust you, Captain. We do. It's Selkor we don't trust. Selkor and the people up there."
She waved her arms skyward. Jason's dad could sympathize with refugees making unofficial reconnaissances, especially on board their own ships. But Han was in charge now. Instead of showing his amusement, he was supposed to enforce Selkor regulations. Publicly, at least. Jason watched the show, trying to pick up one more piece of the puzzle he felt in every cell of his being. Trained as a Jedi and unusually perceptive, he could tell that the Force was about to move, to shift. This time, he didn't dare miss the clues. He leaned against his hut's outer wall and stared out over his new home in Settlement 32. The Synthplast Dome had been engineered by Selkor, the New Republic Senate Select Committee for Refugees, to hold 1,000 settlers. Naturally, 1,200 had been squeezed in. Besides these outcast Rin, there were several hundred desperate humans, delicate Vors, Vuvrians with their enormous round heads, and one young Hutt. And the relentless Yuuzhan Vong kept sweeping across the galaxy, destroying whole worlds, enslaving or sacrificing planetary populations. If the Yuuzhan Vong could be stopped, the New Republic hadn't figured out how. Han stood with his left hand on his hip, arguing with Metsa, who led the larger of two Rin clan remnants. Han had chased the Rin over half the New Republic, trying to gather his new friend Droma's invasion-scattered clanmates. As world after world closed its doors to refugees, the Rin had been beggared, duped, and betrayed. They'd taken terrible losses. They needed a sponsor. So a reluctant Han Solo registered with the burgeoning Select Committee for Refugees. "Just long enough to settle them someplace." That was how he explained it to Jason, anyway. Jason had fled here from Coruscant. 2 months ago, the New Republic had called him and his brother, Anakin, to Centerpoint Station, the massive hyperspace repulsor and gravity lens in the Corellian system. There'd been hope that Anakin, who had activated Centerpoint once before, could enable it again. Military advisors had hoped to lure the Yuuzhan Vong into attacking Corellia, and they meant to use Centerpoint as an interdiction field to trap the enemy inside Corellian space and then wipe them out. The New Republic might never recover from the catastrophe that followed. Jason could see stress in his dad's lined face and in the gray growing into his hair. Standing on the beaten dust lane outside the Solo's hut, Metsa's opposing clan leader, Romani, twisted his own tail between strong hands. "So your clan," Han said, pointing at Romani, "thinks your clan," pointing now at Metsa, "is likely to hijack our transport ships and strand everybody else here on Duro. Is that it?" Someone at the back of Romani's group shouted, "I wouldn't put it past them, Solo!" Han stuck his hands into his dusty coverall pockets and caught Jason's glance. Jason could almost look him in the eye nowadays. "Any suggestions?" Han muttered. But just at that moment, Jason collapsed, his chest flashing with fire as if he'd been torn open. His legs burned so fiercely he could almost feel hot shrapnel. The pain blasted down his legs, then into his ears. "Jaina?" he wondered.
Joined through the Force even before they were born, he and Jaina had always been able to tell when the other was hurt or afraid. But for him to sense her over the distances that lay between them now, she must have been terribly. The pain winked off. "Jaina," he whispered, appalled.
"No."
He stretched out toward her, trying to find her again through the Force.
"Jason."
A voice seemed to echo in his mind, but it wasn't Jaina's. It was deep, male, vaguely like his uncle's. Making an effort, Jason imagined his uncle's face, trying to focus on that echo. An enormous white vortex seemed to spin around him. It pulled at him, drawing him toward its dazzling center. What was going on? Then he saw his uncle, robed in pure white, half turned away. Luke Skywalker held his shimmering lightsaber in a diagonal stance, hands at hip level, point high. "Jaina!" Jason shouted the words in his mind. "Uncle Luke, Jaina's been hurt!" Then he saw what held his uncle's attention. In the dim distance, but clearly in focus, a second form straightened and darkened. Tall, humanoid, powerfully built, it had a face and chest covered with sinuous scars and tattoos. Its hips and legs were encased in rust-brown armor. Claws protruded from its heels and knuckles, and an ebony cloak flowed from its shoulders. The alien held a coal-black, snake-headed amphistaff across its body, mirroring the angle of Luke's lightsaber, pitting poisonous darkness against verdant light. The alien swung its amphistaff. The Jedi Master's lightsaber blazed, swept down, and blocked the swing, brightening until it washed out almost everything else in the vision. The Yuuzhan Vong's amphistaff seemed darker than any absence of light, a darkness that seemed alive, but promised death. The broad spinning disc on which they both stood slowed. It focused into billions of stars. Jason picked out the familiar map of known space. Luke dropped into a fighting stance poised near the galaxy center, the deep core. He raised his lightsaber and held it high near his right shoulder, pointing inward. From three points of darkness beyond the rim, tattooed assailants advanced. More of them? Jason realized this was a vision, not a battle unfolding in front of him, with little or nothing to do with his twin sister. The galaxy seemed to teeter, poised between light and darkness. Luke stood close to the center, counterweighing the dark invaders. But as their numbers increased, the balance tipped.
"Uncle Luke!" Jason shouted. "What should I do?"
Luke turned away from the advancing Yuuzhan Vong. Looking to Jason with somber intensity, he tossed his lightsaber. It flew in a low humming arc, trailing pale green sparks onto the galactic plain. Eyeing the advancing horde, Jason felt another enemy try to seize him. Anger from deep in his heart, fear and fury focused his strength. If he could, he would utterly destroy the Yuuzhan Vong and all they stood for. He opened a hand, stretched out his arm, and missed. The Jedi weapon sailed past him, shrinking and dimming with distance. Now the galaxy tipped more quickly. A dark, deadly tempest gathered around the warriors. Disarmed, Luke stretched out both hands. First he, then his enemies, swelled to impossible sizes. Instead of human and alien figures, now Jason saw light and darkness as entirely separate forces. Even the light terrified him in its grandeur and majesty. The galaxy seemed poised to plunge toward evil, but Jason couldn't help staring at the fearful light, spellbound, burning his retinas. A voice like Luke's, but deeper, shook the heavens.
"Jason," it boomed, "stand firm."
The horizon tilted farther. Jason lunged forward, determined to lend his small weight to Luke's side, to the light. He misstepped. He flailed for Luke's hand, but missed again, and again his weight fell slightly toward the dark enemies. Luke seized his hand and held tightly.
"Hang on, Jason,"
the voice said. The slope steepened under their feet. The Yuuzhan Vong warriors scrambled forward. Stars extinguished under clawed enemy feet. Plainly, the strength of a 100-odd Jedi couldn't keep the galaxy from falling to this menace. One misstep could doom everyone they'd sworn to protect. No military force could stop this invasion because it was a spiritual battle.
And if one pivotal person fell to the dark side, or even used the ravishing, terrifying power of light in a wrong way, then this time everything they knew might slide into stifling darkness. Again he heard the voice.
Stand firm, Jason.
One of the Yuuzhan Vong leapt toward him. Jason gasped and flung out both arms and grabbed a flimsy bedsheet. He lay on his back on a cot under a corrugated blue synthplast roof.
Junior, another familiar voice drawled. Hey there, glad you could join us.
Jason looked up into his father's wry half-smile. Worry lines crowded Han's eyes. Behind him, the Rin named Droma clutched and twisted his soft red and blue cap, and his long mustachios drooped.
What happened?
Han looked befuddled.
Hit your head on the way down?
Skinny here. Droma pointed at a 2-1B medical droid and finished Han's sentence. Wants to dump you into the Bacta tank.
Han swung toward his friend. Listen, Bristleface, when I want to say something, I'll say it.
Jaina,
Jason managed. The back of his skull throbbed in rhythm with his pulse. He almost opened his mouth to describe what he'd seen, but he hesitated. If the fate of billions rested on a balance point so narrow that one misstep could doom everyone, did he dare even mention his vision until his own path seemed clear?
What? His father demanded. What about Jaina?
Jason squeezed his eyes shut.
What is it that you want me to do?
He begged the unseen force.
We've got to contact Rogue Squadron, Jason blurted. I think she's been hurt.
Unable to get a line out from the settlement's comm center, Han and Jason had retreated to the Millennium Falcon to see if they'd have any better luck from there. Jason perched on the Falcon's high-backed co-pilot seat. A cascading rhythm of beeps rang in the cockpit as the repeater frequency came alive.
Solo here in the Millennium Falcon. Call is for Coruscant. New Republic military, I want Colonel Darklighter's office.
They waited. Jason, Han said softly, what scared you off from using the Force? 2 years ago, you were as gung-ho as Anakin. I haven't seen you levitate anything since you got here.
Jason gripped the arms of Chewbacca's chair.
It's complicated. His dad wasn't criticizing, he just didn't understand. Try me.
Han's eyes bored into Jason. Jason had told him what happened at Center Point. The powerful hyperspace repulsor and gravity lens had responded to Anakin's touch all right. It reactivated just as before. And at that moment, the Yuuzhan Vong fleet, the one that the New Republic had hoped to lure to Corellia, appeared out of hyperspace at Fondor instead. Han's cousin, Thrakken Salsolo, insisted that the mighty shield should be used as an offensive weapon. He tried to bully Anakin into firing at the Yuuzhan Vong across the vast distance between systems.
Jason begged Anakin not to take the shot. Firing that weapon would have been the ultimate aggression.
Anakin yielded to Jason. For one moment, the brothers shared a true moral victory. Then Thrakken seized the controls. He blasted the Yuuzhan Vong battle group and decimated the noble flotilla that Hapes had sent to the New Republic's aid, thanks to Leia Organa Solo's diplomatic efforts. The Yuuzhan Vong retreated, the surviving Hapens fled home, and now Thrakken Salsolo was being hailed as a hero. Anakin had insisted that he could have fired Centerpoint without hitting the Hapens. Jason had resisted believing him for almost a week. Then the self-doubts caught him. Maybe Anakin could have done it all. Destroyed the aliens, spared the Hapens, saved Fondor. When did aggressive defense become the aggression that was forbidden to Jedi? Keeping only his lightsaber, Jason found passage from Coruscant to Duro. If he couldn't fight alongside Uncle Luke and the others, maybe he could at least help his father manage refugees.
I only know that you can't fight darkness with darkness. Sometimes I even think that the more you fight evil, the more you empower it.
Han opened his mouth to protest.
It's different for us, Jason insisted. If we use the Force aggressively, that can lead to the dark side. But where does strong action become aggression? The line keeps blurring.
The console beeped, rescuing him.
Rogue Squadron,
a voice rang in the cockpit.
Colonel Darklighter's office. Captain Solo, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. We're checking on Jaina.
Good timing,
the voice answered.
This is Major Harthus. Jaina's X-Wing has been destroyed in a firefight. She had to go EV. A fellow pilot brought her in.
Injured?
Legs, chest. Bacta ought to take care of it.
Han grunted as Jason exhaled in relief.
Her pressure suit held, but she was close to an attack cruiser, one of ours, when the drive blew. She got a massive mag field exposure.
Jason's blood turned icy. Will she recover?
The exposure clouded her corneas. It's reversible, but it'll metabolize very slowly.
The voice hesitated.
We can't tie up military personnel to nursemaid her. We'd, like to send her to you on Duro, Captain. That'll save us the trouble of hunting down her mother.
Isn't she back on Coruscant?
No, Captain. She's on a mission for Selkor, but hasn't made contact with Coruscant recently.
Leia Organa Solo sat at the head of a long synthwood table. Surrounded by bickering scientists, she would have liked to cradle her head in both hands, plug her ears, and demand that they stop acting like children. Duro did that to people. Conditions here were appalling. Still, with Borsk Velia clinging to power on Coruscant, this was one way she could shore up the New Republic, protect the Jedi's reputation, and wear herself out so thoroughly that every night she dropped onto her cot, too exhausted to worry about her own scattered family. Even if she was starting to feel like a non-person, this Duro project might be the most significant job she ever took on. To remake a world in these terrible times would be an enormous victory. Fired by her vision of creating a haven for refugees who'd lost everything but their lives, and could yet lose even that, Leia had agreed to work as a liaison between this bickering gang of researchers and Selkor back on Coruscant. She hadn't put her name on any of the weekly reports that came out of Gateway, the refugee settlement she administered here on Duros. She was sick of dealing with Coruscant's new breed of bureaucrats. They could find her if they tried hard enough.
While we're here,
a Hodin plant development specialist rested his off-green forearms on the tabletop. His long legs almost didn't fit under the conference table.
I would like to petition for Sector 4 of the reclaimed marshlands. I have several promising vegetative species under development.
I apologize for interrupting my esteemed colleague,
the cereals specialist put in,
but Sector 4 was promised to the Grains Project.
And where's Kriar?
The meteorologist spoke Leia's mind. So far, Dr. Dasid Kriar had missed every one of these weekly meetings. Not that I blame him, Leia thought wryly. Kriar, a plant geneticist, sent his reports via datapad. Leia had known many truly eccentric people, whose brilliance showed not only in their results, but in odd personal habits. Under Kriar's supervision, refugees had cleansed 6 half-click squares of marshland and created Duro's first arable croplands since the Duros left the surface of their planet, ruined by the leavings of Imperial war factories, to live in orbital cities. No wonder Kriar didn't take time off for staff meetings. He probably was as tired of bureaucracy as Leia was herself. 4 hours later, Leia let down her long coil of hair and tumbled onto her cot. What am I doing here? The thought flitted through her mind. Living with only C-3PO and her two Nogri bodyguards, Bazbakan and Olmak, for company, made her feel as if she'd forgotten something critically important day after day. It really was fortunate she was much too tired to worry too much about Han or the children. Her last thought was,
I really should reach out through the Force for them. How many days has it been?
The war vessel Sunulok, underway for decades, showed its age in a thousand small ways. Striding down one of its coral-lined arteries, Savong La ignored those marks of age and death. A living cape clung to his shoulders by its needle-clawed, gripping fingers. Rust-colored scales hung like armor plates from his breastbone and shoulder blades. Each larval armor scale had been seated against bone, while a priestly choir sang atonal incantations on his behalf, renewing his pledges of devotion to Yunyamka, god of war. Over half a year, the plates had grown slowly, stretching his tendons, tugging his joints to new angles. Then the priests had declared Savangla's painful transformation to War Master complete. Savangla embraced pain. Suffering honored his gods, who had created the universe by sacrificing parts of themselves. When he reached his communication center, he found a striking young attendant. Black anabars burned across her pale cheeks, seated at her station. She sprang up and saluted as he entered the chamber.
"War Master," she said reverently, "I roused the Master Vilip in your privacy chamber, and I commanded the executor to present himself."
Zabangla strode to the far bulkhead. This part of Sunniluk had grown an array of geometrically staggered coral blastulas where dozens of smaller Vilips lay quiescent. He entered the largest blastula of all. He waited until the cubical sphincter closed, then frowned at the leathery ball isolated on a display stand. Budded like yeast from master Vilips and nurtured in onboard nurseries, the mollusk-like genus enabled instantaneous long-distance communication. The Vilip mirrored the disgraced executor's face, sparely fleshed with the crooked nose of multiple breaks showing great devotion and maybe more vanity than was appropriate. In place of his left eye, Nor-Manor had inserted a venom-spitting Plarin ball.
"War Master."
The Vilip gave a good imitation of Nor-Manor's voice. Its bass undertone suggested deference and submission.
"How many have they added to your herd?"
Savong asked.
6,400 since we spoke. Many came from Fondor.
"Watch for worthy ones,"
Savong reminded him.
"With better sacrifices, we might be cleansing the inner worlds now."
Nor-Manor ducked his head.
"And Jedi,"
he promised. He pronounced the difficult word well. Savangla nodded and touched the ridgecrest of Nor-Manor's Vilip. The face faded and smoothed out, and the Vilip retracted, sucking itself back through its mouth hole. On his distant world, Nor-Manor would be putting his new masker back on. Not an Ooglith, but a newly bred type that imitated a non-human species. Anor's human contact on the enemy's capital world had agreed to deliver shiploads of captives to his current system. As soon as Tsavong arrived there, he would have the glad task of sorting the worthy from the unworthy. A reverent mass sacrifice might convince mighty Yunyamka to let Tsavong reach the galactic core, bringing him that much closer to the world he truly wanted to offer his gods, Coruscant. Mara Jade Skywalker had been a wide-eyed child when Emperor Palpatine brought her to Coruscant. She'd survived Palpatine's training 1 hour and 1 day at a time. Now, everyone tended to think of Coruscant as ground zero again, this time as the Yuuzhan Vong's ultimate objective. Meanwhile, her husband was training another apprentice, obviously assuming there would be peace and justice to defend in the future. She wondered, though, if it was hope or just habit that kept them all sticking to business. She stared over folded hands at her younger nephew. Seated next to Luke, wearing a light brown tunic under his Jedi robe, dark-haired Anakin Solo had a saturnine intensity, a Corellian surname, and his father's wry lift to one eyebrow. Still, his blue eyes simmered with the eagerness to save the galaxy, alone, if necessary, and that was pure Skywalker. Seven Jedi had circled their chairs deep in central Coruscant's governmental district this morning, a few meters from a balcony overlooking a bustling mezzanine. Colonel Kenth Hamner, a strikingly tall human Jedi with a long, aristocratic face, served the New Republic's military as a strategist. He shook his head and said, "With Fondor's shipyards gone and the hyperspace routes mined, we're pulling in from the Inner Rim, even the colonies. Rodia is in serious danger. Thank the Force, Anakin brought Centerpoint back up." Anakin leaned forward, gripping his hands as he interjected, "As long as we don't lose Corellia, Thrakens likely to expel all the Drawl and Salonians, declare Corellia a human-only zone, and lock out the rest of us if we let him." Mara knew Anakin well, so she could imagine the thoughts he didn't speak. "Because I didn't fire Centerpoint when I could have. Now Thrakens a hero, no matter how many bystanders he killed." Kenth Hamner shook his head. "Don't blame yourself, Anakin. A Jedi must keep his power under control. We have to hesitate and consider the consequences. You couldn't hurry to fire Centerpoint, and you did well. Maybe Centerpoint will be the Corps' last defense if we can get it repaired. From there, we could defend the shipyards at Kuat and protect Coruscant. True, Luke told Hamner. Bothawe, though, between the embattled huts and threatened Rhodia, clearly was endangered. Silgal, the Mon Calamari healer, sat listening to the conversation, bowing her massive head. These days were growing long for the healers. Silgal had confided that they were seeing stress illnesses like never before. The fearful strain of watching an invasion displace and kill so many peoples was like watching a disease eat away at a helpless friend. Mara caught a glint of blue from Luke's direction. She intercepted his concerned glance and choked off the dismal thought. Her disease, like a protean cancer, had undergone constant random mutations, making it uncontrollable. It should have been fatal. For 3 months, she'd been in remission. The tears of an alien creature, Vergir, briefly in custody with a Yuuzhan Vong agent, had restored her strength. She hesitated to call herself cured, though. For the moment, I feel good. That's enough. Crowded around a tracking screen in the hardened control shed, Jason and Han watched a small blip grow on the tracking screen. A tickling sensation finally thrust itself into the back of Jason's mind. It's Jaina, he confirmed. Han crossed his arms, frowning. How is she? Jason examined the feeling. Mad. One of 32's snake-like cofferdams extended to the Medrunner. Jason and Han stood at the foot of its landing ramp as the hatch opened. Watching over his father's shoulder, Jason spotted a dark gray coverall, dark hair chopped surprisingly short, and his sister's face, half covered by some kind of mask. Jaina batted away her droid attendant's extended limb. I can walk down a ramp. Hi, Dad. Hello, Jason. Thanks for coming to pick up the pieces. Two curved, darkened lenses hung from a soft headband with several connectors alongside. Jason hoped the meds hadn't had to implant anything under her scalp to make the thing work. You can see well enough to recognize us, Han said. That's not bad. I can tell you apart through the Force. What I see is shadows and darker shadows. It's getting better. She shut her mouth firmly, but only for a moment. Sending me here was a waste of fuel. Unless you've heard something I haven't. She folded her arms and glared at Jason. Am I terminal or something, and they just haven't told me? No, Jason exclaimed. You're healing well. They just didn't want to risk you in combat. Or risk that you'd endanger someone else, he added, trying to push her anger away. Not you, too. Jaina pulled off her mask and pushed her face closer to his. Her eyes did look cloudy, the pupils faintly gray. Their dad clapped an arm around her shoulder. Come inside, sweetie. Let's get you settled. 2 days later, Jason adjusted his breath mask and leaned against 32's comm shed, waiting for the Corduro supply shuttle. 32 had been promised a load of chemical fertilizers for its hydroponics operation. Without them, the new crop of foodstuffs would wither in the tanks. Still, it didn't take a Jedi Master to realize this freighter wasn't coming. Frowning, Jason entered the shed.
It isn't coming, is it?
Randa Basadi Diori's voice rumbled. He had positioned his belly in front of the control board. Randa had been sent by his parent, Borga, leader of the most powerful Kajitic on Nal Hutta, to run slaves for the Yuuzhan Vong. Randa had defected at Fondor, supposedly. What are you doing in here? Jason demanded. Randa puffed out his sloping chest.
With my parent Borga defending Nal Hutta with only half the clan's support, where am I? Stranded and shipless as one of these idiot refugees. I am willing to stand communication watch day and night. That way I will hear any news from home and free up workers for other tasks. I have noble news out of Kubindi. Tragic. But noble.
Oh? Jason leaned one arm against the comm board. News from out-system was getting rare enough to tolerate listening to Randa relay it.
Word is out that Kip's dozen...
Jason clenched a hand at that name, but he didn't interrupt.
Held off a Yuuzhan Vong attack force long enough that the Kubas got every spaceworthy ship off-planet. You cannot call that anything less than heroic.
Listen, Randa, I don't admire Kip the way you do. He killed millions.
Randa waved a stubby arm.
Long ago, he was young.
Well, I'm young now, and I don't approve.
Tragic,
Randa said softly.
The way the Jedi are dividing. Supposedly, Jedi protect others. I see none of that from you, Jedi Solo.
Jason wondered what the young Hutt really wanted.
If we could get to Coruscant, you and I could strike a blow that would make the Yuuzhan Vong regret ever coming to this galaxy. I hear you are an exceedingly good pilot.
Randa narrowed his huge black eyes.
My sister's better, so is my brother, Jason admitted.
But destiny has brought us together, Jedi Solo. I will find a way to leave Duro and rush to Nal Hutta's aid if all I can do is arrive too late and crash a ship in the middle of the invader's celebratory banquet. Or I shall locate Kip Duron and throw my support behind his squadron, carrying the battle to the enemy, as far as I can see,
Randa concluded.
Duron is the only Jedi who truly is carrying the fight to the Yuuzhan Vong.
Randa, Master Skywalker is right. We have to be cautious about using the Force. We have to resist anger, hate, and aggression. Those will tempt us into an evil that's just as dangerous as the Yuuzhan Vong.
Randa clenched his tiny hands and puffed up to his full size.
Spare me your dark side and light side. If you're a Jedi, act like a Jedi, or get out of the way and let other Jedi do what this war requires to protect others.
I'm working on that, Jason insisted, but right now I need a Goku line.
Sighing heavily, Randa slid away from the main comm board. Jason's first call raised the Duro's military as usual. Jason talked himself far enough down the line to reach a shipping clerk who seemed willing to check records. Yes, the shuttle in question had arrived at Baburo City. Corduro Shipping had taken charge of the transfer. A Corduro pilot had taken off with it, bound for Erdorf City, the smallest Duros orbital city.
Stolen.
He cut the connection and flicked his comm link. Dad? After several seconds, he got an answer.
Find it, Junior?
The Duros diverted it. Dad, I think this would justify spending the fuel to go up and talk to them.
No,
Han said firmly.
They don't want to talk. We'll think of something. Borrow supplies from Gateway, maybe.
Jason knew exactly what his dad meant when he said, borrow. An unexpected transmission called Sabang La away from Sun Yulok's Vilip Choir. In that chamber, signal Vilips fashioned optical fields that showed long arcs of space, sent by Vilips positioned for relay. Images from Nal Hutta showed the seeding of microbes that would reshape the scum-ridden, pestilent planet and its ghastly moon, covered with technological monstrosities, back into something fertile and lovely. Sabang La was not pleased to be called away, but the executor's report was worth hearing. Seated in the coral-lined privacy chamber, he glared at the Vilip's rendition of Nom Anor's dumbfounded face.
Not one Jedi, but three?
He asked.
Yes, War Master,
Nom Anor replied.
Three have been spotted now.
The War Master drew up to his formidable height, squaring his spiked shoulders.
Not by you.
By my agents. I scrupulously avoid the presence of any Jedi.
Their names, Sabang ordered, relaxing.
Leia Organa Solo remains supervisor of this dome. The other two Jedi came to my attention only this morning. My agents on Baburo have monitored a number of out-system calls from Settlement 32. They identified a passenger who arrived by medical evacuation ship as Organa Solo's daughter, Jaina. Gorduro Shipping reports dealing with another at 32. Jaina's brother, the cowardly Jedi who went missing from Coruscant. The coward's name.
Name me no coward. He is not worthy to be known.
Then may I offer a suggestion?
Savang La nodded.
I have developed a new organism.
Savang La frowned. No Manor fancied himself a shaper, dabbling in others' sanctified specialties.
When we need to break down these abominable domes and let in living atmosphere,
Anor continued,
it should be useful. Meanwhile, I would like to test it in the two younger Jedi's dome.
Only as long as Organa Solo remains ignorant of your presence. Somehow these Jedi recognize us through our maskers.
I serve you with my life and death.
No Manor answered. Savang La touched his villip. Nomanor's face faded, shrank, and was sucked back into the villip's interior. Savang La sat for another minute, stroking his frayed lip, slit many times in devotion to Yun Yamka. Destroying Duro's shipcrafting facility would deny his enemies warships and materiel. Cutting their trade routes again would wreak economic havoc. And at Duro, he would make an example that the galaxy's surviving inhabitants would not dare to ignore. Mara sat with Luke at a long briefing table in a sequestered room on Coruscant, protected by sonic containment fields. At the table's head, Idar Nilikerka, chief of fleet intelligence, stood beside a three-dimensional galactic map that gleamed over the table's modulasers. Most of its starfields shone faintly blue, but a substantial slice starting near Belkaden shone red, those systems that had been taken by the Yuuzhan Vong. Nilikerka swept his laser pointer through that sector. As you see, our hyperspace probes are returning limited information. Kalarba, Druckenmel, and Feline are lost. Even if we could retain Rhodia, he said, glancing at Rhodian Counselor Narek, the Corellian run is cut. Narek's ears swiveled toward Chief of State Felia.
Once again, a mid-rim world is sacrificed in the name of protecting the core. Or Bothawi, he said angrily.
Mara frowned. The Bothan Chief of State had managed to keep the remains of the Fifth Fleet deployed at home, but he looked twitchy, defensive. Ripples danced almost constantly across his furred face. With such grave damage to Fondor, we are equally concerned with protecting Kuat Drive Yards, Counselor Tribak of Kashyyyk said through his translator droid. He gestured toward the Advisory Council's newest member, Senator Vicky Shesh of Kuat, who nodded acknowledgement.
Centerpoint Station, Fyor Rodin of Commonor said, is ideally positioned to defend Kuat, but what is Centerpoint's current status? Can we count on Corellia?
My report isn't good, Idar Nilikerka answered. After Centerpoint was fired toward Fondor, there was some kind of interior malfunction, probably due to Sal Solo's mishandling. That information must not reach the Yuuzhan Vong, though. As long as they consider Centerpoint operational, it provides a deterrent for this entire region. Mara sensed uneasiness around the table. Several heads nodded somberly. Felia crossed his arms over his tunic.
And now Corellia threatens to act alone, making the Centerpoint weapon its rallying point.
Quan Counselor Puo lowered his head, resting his facial tentacles against his chest.
Master Skywalker, your nephews allowed Sal Solo to fire the Centerpoint weapon, true?
Mara glared at the aging squidhead. At the New Republic's request, Luke reminded the Council.
We are disturbed, Puo said. Jedi and other vigilante groups are becoming increasingly active. Justice must be meted out under the rule of law, not by petty tyrants in X-Wing fighters.
Mara eyed Fyor Rodin, who'd made no secret of his opposition to forming any new Jedi Council. When peace and justice are threatened, Luke said, our mandate to rescue becomes a mandate to defend whole worlds. It's true that some Jedi have used that mandate to rationalize extreme behavior. Despite what some of you think, I've done my best to correct them. Their freedom to make choices means they are free to make wrong ones. Luke rested one elbow on the table. Some Jedi have stepped back from using the Force almost entirely, for fear of misusing it. My nephew Jason, for one. Mara happened to be looking at Vicky Shesh at that moment. The Kuwati senator raised one manicured eyebrow. The Jedi are scattered, Luke went on. They're my commitment. We're all answerable to you.
Is that so?
Narek of Rhodium muttered. Luke turned to the Rhodium. Yes, he said, it is. For as long as this body represents peace and justice. Narek clasped his hands over the table.
My homeworld is about to suffer the most terrible depredations.
And mine, Luke said, is probably next. True enough, Tatooine was just rimward from Rhodia. Narek's green hide darkened.
That is not my concern.
All worlds are my concern, Luke said. In a lounge on one of Coruscant's floating docks, Luke looked through a viewport as Mara sank into a cushioned repulsor chair and blew out a breath. This divisiveness could bring down the New Republic without requiring the Yuuzhan Vong to bring in a single ship. At one edge of the floating dock, a local shuttle pulled away. Mara's eye caught movement on the lounge's far side. A tall female with short wheat-blonde hair walked toward them. Mara opened herself to the Force, but before she could reach toward the woman, she felt something primitive but alive clinging to her body near her hip-hugging belt. She brushed at it with one hand. Trasina Lobby, Luke murmured to Mara. Mara had met the woman, the first of her people, the Chevs, to show Force talent. Were you expecting her? Mara asked. She brushed her stomach again. Granite slugs often sloughed off walls, and maybe a small one had rolled down under her long vest. She held back her disgust, trying not to distract Luke. Granite slugs were hot ugly, but harmless. Luke raised an eyebrow at her. For the last few minutes, anyway. The Chev woman halted about 2 meters from him. Master Skywalker and Mara, forgive me for coming with urgent business. That's never a problem, Luke said graciously. Sit down, Trasina, get your breath. Again he glanced at Mara. Mara shook her head. It's nothing, she thought at him. She eyed the Chev woman. Thank you, Trasina said as she sat. I just got back from Duro. I went out with my apprentice, Thrinive. Mara nodded. In the last year, Luke had assigned Jedi listening teams to most major systems and some critical minor ones. Thrinny and I have been keeping watch on several Duro shipping concerns, Trasina said. The situation there has been quietly getting complicated. In what way? Mara asked. This couldn't be my disease flaring up again, she thought. Could it? Back at their room, she still had a few precious drops of Vergeer's tears left. Well, I hardly know where to start. Trasina shook her head. The Duro's High House wasn't at all thrilled by Selkor's reclamation proposal. Evidently, their shipping concerns bought out a few representatives, and then Selkor carried the vote. Why would the shipping concerns do that? Luke asked. Thrinny and I thought we had a lead, she said. Selkor's contractor for out-system goods, Corduro Shipping, has been intercepting shipments. They're letting out Tapcalf talk that they're reselling to other refugee groups, but there are quieter rumors of goods being stockpiled in another orbital city, Erdorf, the one that's supposedly being modified. Interesting ruse, Mara said, determined to concentrate. Thrinny and I were collecting information in the capital city, the one the Duros call Buburu. We traced some of the intercepted goods from one shipyard arm to another, where it left for Erdorf. And? Mara prompted gently. Trasina's hands had tightened on the arms of her chair. 11 days before I left Buburu, Thrinny vanished.